Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning in once again. I'm Henrik Pungren, and this is Red Ice TV, and we are back. It's great to be with you once again from the new studio. We're so excited to be here. We're so excited to be able to speak to you again, and it's been a while. We, of course, have been involved in a big move. Things have been delayed. Things have been, you know, there's a lot of things to say about it, but we are finally back, and we're actually going to do our first interview from the new studio today, so that's going to be great. I just want to extend a couple of thanks before we go over to our guests and talk about some of the current issues that have happened here in the last week. And of course, one of those issues has been the shutdown of our PayPal accounts. And of course, we are being targeted together with many other outlets and people as well, or persons, I should say, that actually have, you know, gotten their accounts shut down and stuff like that. I just wanted to extend a thank you to everyone who's helped us, who took a look at the video that Lana and I did, where, of course, we basically pleaded for some help with you guys out there to be able to maintain and continue Red Ice in the intermediary period until we can find a new solution and find other gateways and stuff like that. So thank you to everyone who's helped us out. If you haven't watched the video, please go watch it. You'll get a full backstory of what happened and what we are basically asking for you guys out there. So anyone who wants to help us out and donate so we can continue to do the shows and do the live shows and do the Weekend Warrior shows and everything else in the meantime, you know, please help us out. But thank you so much to everyone who has helped out so far. We love you guys and thank you so much again. All right, so we're going to talk about some of the recent news, of course, a little bit of an analysis on what's happened with the Trump and Putin conference in Helsinki, the summit there. Amazing fallout from the mainstream media, who, of course, went after Trump yet again on this issue because he was more careful and being more diplomatic together with Putin, of course, instead of hanging him out to dry and blame him for the supposed meddling, that's the word they've chosen, in the elections 2016 that, of course, got Trump elected. But our guest today is Dr. Kevin MacDonald from the Occidental Observer. Welcome back, Kevin. It's great to see you again and talk to you once again.
Great to be here, Henry. Great to be here.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you, Kevin. So let's talk about this a little bit and see what the fallout was from this conference, because I think it was great. I think actually Trump managed to kind of switch the issue a little bit, of course, and focus yet again back on the Clintons. But he did backpedal in one of the comments. I think I saw it was a CNN clip, and he was talking about how he should have said that he didn't see that the reason why it wouldn't be Russia or something like that. He was backpedaling on one of the most significant comments that actually made during the conference. But I thought otherwise he handled it very well. What did you think of this, Kevin?
Well, it's unprecedented. I mean, the media's been hating on Trump from day one, from the time he declared his candidacy, really. This is just this breaks all the records. I think Trump probably should have known what would happen, but he said something. But, you know, by saying he didn't think that Russia had meddled, he was definitely stepping on a lot of toes. I mean, first of all, this is the dominant media narrative. It's the Mueller investigation is now indicting these Russians. And so to say that there was no Russian meddling was anathema. That's why he walked that back. It doesn't seem all that plausible that he, you know, really didn't say that. You know, you got to say, I mean, our intelligence agencies, the U.S. intelligence agencies, have lied about things. Absolutely. You know, they've lied about weapons of mass destruction. They've lied about various things. I tweeted today, I think it was Byron York of the Washington Times had a list of things that of other lies that the head of intelligence, like Brennan, has made. Clapper, bald-faced lies to congressional committees. I mean, why assume that our intelligence agencies are on the up and up? I mean, the deep state is a reality. You've got a lot of people in those agencies that were appointed by Obama or Clinton or even George Bush, and they hate Trump. And so, yeah, they're going to pursue these policies. I think we have to take what our intelligence agencies say with a grain of salt. But the fact is, this is something, this scandal, this thing that's happened since Helsinki, you know, I think it has more legs than what Trump has said about immigration. If you look at the polls, people in general supported the idea that, you know, there should be some limits. We should have borders. We should not abolish ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But on this one, you've got a lot of conservatives who are on board with the hate Putin idea.
Yeah.
It's because they're involved with the Israel lobby, or they're sort of have this hangover from our old Cold War attitudes that Russia's our enemy. And they ignore the fact that the West, and the U.S. in particular, has aggressively moved against Russia since the Cold War. I mean, you know, we have recruited all these nations in Eastern Europe, Poland, Czechoslovakia, the Czech Republic, and all these are now in NATO, and they're in the EU. And, you know, Russia sees that as a threat, obviously. What happened in Ukraine was very upsetting to the Russians, because you had this neocon-led coup, you had a pro-Russian government that was unseated by neocons, were the fundamental force there. People like Victoria Nuland, who's the daughter-in-law, what is she? Anyway, she's deeply involved in the family connections. She's
married to Kagan, right?
She's married to Kagan, yep. Who's a totally central neocon.
Yeah.
And Kagan, you know, the one of these guys, he was big with Hillary Clinton on foreign policy. He was going to probably would have had a high position in the Clinton administration if she'd gotten elected. So Russia has a lot of reasons to distrust the United States. So I'm worried that Trump's whole agenda is going to be swept aside by this, because they have the moral high ground here. They feel that way. And I have never seen the condemnation. Use words like traitor. Trump is a traitor. High crimes and misdemeanors. He should be impeached on the basis of this. It's a disgrace. It's yada, yada.
Yeah, what is he supposed to do? He's a world leader. He's obviously doing the diplomatic path here, right? I mean, he's leading towards
peace. What's he supposed to do?
De-escalate and, you know, yeah, exactly.
I mean, American presidents have talked with foreign leaders that are not our friends.
Absolutely.
Forever. I
mean, of course.
Nixon went to visit Mao, mean, come on. This has been going on. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily, you know, agreeing with everything. But now in this context here, oh, it's a big conspiracy.
And it's funny, too, because it's also this, Kevin, that it's done by people who all of a sudden pretend that they're concerned with American nationalism or national security. There's people who don't want any borders. They just want to have open borders. They effectively, as Trump has said, they don't want a country. If you don't have a borders, you don't have a country, right? They're all for that. But now they're like, he's a traitor to America. He's violating all these things. It's the hypocrisy is just ridiculous.
As you say, these people on the left, they don't want borders, but somehow America has vital national interests that can't be violated by this. I mean, it's just ludicrous. They're wrapping themselves in the flag. It's so ironic. There was a tweet by Michael Moore, you know, this deranged leftist filmmaker.
Yeah, yep.
And he's talking about, treason on television. What a joke for someone like this to care about American national interests.
Yep.
They don't. This is all politics. They just hate Trump, and they see this as a wedge.
That's it. That's it.
I'm very worried about it, though. I don't like it.
No, of course not. I remember, we know that McCain for a long time has been whipping this up, and especially the anti-Russian sentiment. I remember reading a Washington, Wall Street Journal article. It was an excerpt from his latest book, right? His autobiography or something like that. It's probably shadow written by someone who doesn't have brain cancer or whatever, but, you know, he was coming down, of course, on Trump because of this concern of, you know, he's trying to ramp up this anti, you know, kind of Putin sentiment in the article, and talking about how, you know, Trump is in on it. And again, doing all these connections that we've heard for years now. But again, Putin at the press conference, he said, like, what is the evidence? Like, you have to provide proof. He's like, stop talking about it. If you don't provide proof, there's nothing there. And it's all smoke and there is no fire. I've yet to see it. It's all circumstantial. Now they've indicted these 12 Russians, were they in the military or something, and or intelligence services, and who are these people, and nothing is ever going to come out of this, but it makes it seem to the public that, well, there's stuff going on here, and there's this and this. If you tune into CNN, that's all you see. It's a done deal as far as they're concerned, you know.
Somehow a few ads in Facebook or something compromising or getting information from the computers of the Democratic National Committee. Those are things that absolutely swung the election in these people's mind. You know, they have this idea. There's no evidence for that. And there's never going to be any that they can prove. I wouldn't be surprised if Russia spied, you know, and tried to influence things. America's done it actually, by there's a count, 81 times.
At least.
Since World War II or something like that, America's done that to other countries.
Absolutely. Yep.
Way more than any other country. And we've been successful doing it. You know, and we don't talk about Israel trying to influence our elections, Mexico influencing our elections, none of that.
Yep.
Only Russia. This is a joke. And they'll never be able to show that Russia had any influence on the actual outcome. It is all motivated to get Trump. That's the only thing. They feel they finally have the wedge here. I worry that people, you know, because you've got people like McCain, as you say, and you got Jeff Flake, and you got all these other ones who are on board with, you know, with hating on Russia. Because it's been such a neoconservative mantra in the last few years, since the Bush administration, at least. So they're latching onto that. And that's why you worry, because if you had all the Democrats and enough of these stupid-ass Republicans who are on board with impeachment, well, who knows what could happen?
Yeah, we'll have to see how that develops. The point I wanted to make also with McCain there is that he was describing a concern for American national security, you know, in this article. And again, it was an excerpt from his latest book. And it's funny because he was basically coming down on Putin for doing the kind of things that McCain himself in the article was advocating for that America is doing, right? To secure its own interest and to secure. Yeah. But as you said, America has been way more expansive in the old satellite states to Russia, obviously, and meddling in their elections, getting their puppet regimes in place, getting American bases in these places, getting NATO involvement, as you said before. What is Russia supposed to do? Just roll back, lay down, and give up? Mm-hmm. I mean, this it's not going to happen. And they're ramping this up. This is the thing.
And they're emphasizing now that whatever meddling happened in the Obama administration. You know, if anybody should have prevented it, they should have. And again, there's no evidence of collusion. There's never been any. And I don't think there's going to come out of any. Anything's going to come out of this. So what are we left with? We're left with hate Trump. That's what you're left with.
Yep, that's right.
If this had, you know, if you had someone like Jeb Bush in there and Russia had done the same things, nobody would have cared. This is all about hate Trump.
Yeah, and they've so deeply embedded in the Russian narrative now that they have to follow through on it. That's the only way that they can do to continue. I mean, they can't drop the ball now and say, oh, whoops, there was nothing there. We just lied for 2 years and you know, made stuff up, right? But there was a clip, speaking of, like, you know, acting like coup d'etats and taking things over and shadow governments and everything else. I think it was Philip Mudd, and I think he's, I forget if he's ex-CIA or FBI, but this is what he said on CNN. Check this out.
Senator McCain saying most disgraceful display.
Since that was McCain comment again.
On the world stage. Phil, do you agree with that?
I do, but I mean, I think you have to step back even just a short time after this and say, what next? You've seen senators come out. In the past, we've seen a senator who's in the midst of a painful illness, Senator McCain. You've seen senators like Jeff Flake who are leaving the Senate. Now you see Marco Rubio still obviously in the fight speaking out. My question would be, when do members of the president's inner circle start to say, look, we have an overseas dilemma where you are portraying us in terms of the American government as worse than a tyrant, that is Vladimir Putin. Secretary of Homeland Security came out with statements this week about continued Russian interference. This was not on Obama's watch, that's this week. FBI director continues the investigation. Department of Justice continues support for the investigation. Congress continues saying that this investigation is legitimate. Curious point in American government, when do we see almost a shadow government come out and say, we cannot side with the government, whether it's the cabinet or the Senate? I think that's the big question.
Wow, listen to that. I mean, that's amazing. I'm like literally talking about, you know, again, they're claiming they're upholders of democracy and the democratic model and all this thing. We're losing democracy. So let's take out the guy that actually was democratically elected. They're almost talking like Trump is Assad now or Gaddafi or something, you know?
Yeah. There have been reports that there's been sort of a revolt within the West Wing of the White House, and John Kelly getting all upset and so on. I mean, that's the thing. This idea that Russia is bad and that any kind of influence or something like that, any kind of, we have to take this really hard line against Russia, is very ingrained in American political culture. And so it wouldn't surprise me if you did see some of that. And if that happens, you know, the support for Trump just, you know, is it might fall through the floor. And if that happens, then, well, then someone says, well, impeach, and they do it right now. And you get all the Democrats and a significant number of Republicans, and it happens. I don't see why it couldn't. This hatred towards Russia is imbued. And you say, when Kelly gets upset, when you talk about other aides in the West Wing, it sounds like a revolt in the Palace Guard there. It doesn't sound good.
It's true. And I mean, history is repeating itself, but of course the Bolshevik, you know, role in Russia has now been moved to America, right? They won the culture war. They took over in America. Now everything that we've reflected on this in the past, obviously, but it bears repeating that, like, America is pushing that narrative that the Bolsheviks did at some point, right? And vice versa. Not quite as clear cut, but, you know, something to that effect. Now it's Russia that is horribly conservative, right? And it's all backwards in their way. They're not progressive and stuff like that. But there was, let's get to the one of the things that stood out as well in the press conference, which was Putin's admission, I guess, in terms of, again, Hillary's involvement and that her people had taken money and stuff like that. And preface this, we're going to play a clip here, but just preface this quickly. Someone said that the translator who was doing the translation live got basically the numbers wrong, right? There was a accusation of 400 million that had flown to Putin, basically, right? President Putin accuses Hillary Clinton of accepting 400 million in illegal Russian campaign contributions. That's a lot. So I would understand if it's more like 400,000. Regardless, it is money. It's things that, of course, shouldn't take place. It's still illegal. It doesn't matter what, you know, kind of the amount is. But Kevin, let's listen to that clip and check that out and see what Putin actually kind of came back with on that. So let's tune into that one here.
Can actually permit official representatives of the United States, including the members of this very commission headed by Mr. Mueller, we can let them into the country and they will be present to this questioning. But in this case, there's another condition. This kind of effort should be a mutual one. Then we would expect that the Americans would reciprocate and they would question officials, including the officers of law enforcement and intelligence services of the United States, whom we believe are who have something to do with illegal actions on the territory of Russia. And we have to request the presence of our law enforcement. For instance, we can bring up the Mr. Browder in this particular case. Business associates of Mr. Browder have earned over $1.5 billion in Russia. They never paid any taxes, neither in Russia nor in the United States. And yet the money escaped the country. They were transferred to the United States. They sent huge amount of money, $400 million, as a contribution to the campaign of Hillary Clinton. Well, that's their personal case. It might have been legal, the contribution itself, but the way the money was earned was illegal. So we have a solid reason to believe that some intelligence officers accompanied and guided these transactions. So we have an interest of questioning them.
That's pretty interesting, though. I mean, again, I believe there was an article actually released later about that and said that Putin, I don't know if it was he who misspoke with the translator, but it was about 400,000. But again, Kevin, that's a lot of money. That shouldn't have happened. And still that this issue is something that the mainstream media has completely dropped, which shows that they're in the, you know, they're still supporting Clinton. They're backing her up on every issue. They're not focusing on the crimes and the corruption that she and Bill has been involved in, and the all focus is on Trump, right?
Right. And it was interesting that Putin would go after William Browder because, you know, he's a Jewish oligarch and he has a history of sort of underhanded business practices. And now we're supposed to believe that he's entirely innocent of any wrongdoing, that he didn't evade taxes anywhere and so on. And that what he did in Russia was completely legal. There was a lot of corruption in Russia. We know that. It's ridiculous to think that he couldn't have done that. But there's always an assumption that Russia is the bad guy here, and it's completely wrong for them to want to collect all these taxes and so on. So that's part of the narrative. I mean, and again, this is something that the American neoconservatives have been on this since Putin really got power. The first case was that of Michael Khodorkovsky, who's head of the big oil company, Yukos. And they nailed him. They put him in jail for like 10 years, I think. And
to interrupt, Kevin, but do you know what happened? The first thing that happened when Russia did this, and there's that famous picture of Khodorkovsky like in a cage, you know, in the courtroom. But Ariel Sharon, who was a prime minister or president, I forget, of Israel at the time, flew to have a special meeting with Putin, of course, pleading to him not to do this, not to go after the oligarchs. Most of them were, dual citizens with Israel, including Boris Berezovsky, Khodorkovsky. There was a number of other ones, Abramovich, who like owns football teams in England and stuff like that. Now, but they were jet setting between London and Tel Aviv regularly, and they have been working day and night to twist the media narrative in the West to turn it anti-Russian. And I think that they see Russia as a lost pearl, a lost country of influence. Exactly. There's still, of course, the question whether, you know, how much these groups still have influence there. But at least when it comes to the oligarchs, he wanted them to abide by the rules, Putin. And he wanted them to, you know, be do this legally and all that kind of stuff, while they wanted to do it like some kind of mafioso group or something like that over there.
Yeah, I think Putin's policy has been he doesn't want oligarchs interfering in politics.
Yeah.
When he saw what was happening with Yeltsin, you know, that the complete domination of the media, all the big money coming from these oligarchs into the political process, that they were going to control the whole thing, Duma. They would control that. They control the president and the whole thing. He saw that, you know, unfolding, and he says he's going to stop that. So he hasn't gone after Jews per se, but he's gone after Jews that are really involved in politics, like Khodorkovsky was. And it wasn't just Ariel Sharon and Israel. It was people like Charles Krauthammer. It was a whole neocon thing. If you look at magazines like Weekly Standard, National Review, you'll see all these articles supporting these various oligarchs and painting Putin as a horrible bad guy for doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And just assuming that whatever Putin wanted, whether it was taxes or whatever, was completely illegal, just made it up. And then you got this guy Browder who did all that. And I don't know, you know, there's a complicated story. You go to Wikipedia and it's like, he said, she said, I don't know what the hell happened. But anyway, the point, he goes to Congress and he gets Congress to pass this Magnitsky Act, which prevents these various Russian officials who were involved in arresting this guy Magnitsky, who was one of Browder's associates, involved in all this, the tax stuff. He was a CPA. They got him in prison. Eventually, he died. I guess he was beaten to death. And this guy, Browder testifies in Congress. Pretty soon, they have a law against him. But that's the thing. American political process is very susceptible to that kind of influence where you have, and this pervaded. Really, what's going on here now, the big picture, is it's a testimony to Jewish and neocon media power. You know, the fact that this is instilled now in our political culture, that Russia is bad, Putin is evil. And they can just assume that if Putin says something bad about Browder, well, he must be innocent as the driven snow.
Yeah,
he couldn't possibly have done anything wrong. Without any investigation, without any facts of any kind, you can just ignore all that.
Yeah, definitely. Here's a Wall Street Journal article I mentioned before by John McCain here, talking about how evil Putin is. But in this one, it was interesting because he was talking about in the around 2007 is when he pinpoints in the article, John McCain, where Putin all of a sudden became an evil man. And of course, I think it was 2007. Excuse me, I might get that year wrong, but I looked it up and it's basically the same year that Putin started going after the oligarchs. So, so you see this link between these neocons and these people in America and the West who are just completely either in the pockets or in on it or something like that with these neocon and oligarchs, I should say, over in Russia, trying to control it. But, you know, when Putin said, enough, he started going his own way. He said in the article, well, that's when Putin started to become this dangerous man, and he became this Russian nationalist and impossible to work with. And again, everything that Putin has done is stuff that McCain himself in the article advocates for America to do, security and national security and stuff like this. It's utterly preposterous.
Yeah, there's no question that this is a neocon campaign, and this is a fundamental reason why they hate Putin. And this is the power of the media that has got, seeped into the consciousness of the political class, that having so much effect now. The other thing, of course, is Russia's policy towards Iran and Syria. And the fact that they supported Assad, they support the Iranian regime. That is the kind of thing also. So you got two major things, because, of course, Iran hates Israel, Israel hates Iran. Israel has been deeply involved in this so-called civil war in Syria. And, of course, the neoconservatives want the U.S. to be in Syria. They want the U.S. to foment a war against Iran. And so, there are huge reasons why American political and media elites, being led around, again, by Jewish interests, just hate Putin. And that's not going to go away.
No, it's definitely not. We'll definitely see how this one develops. It's going to be very interesting. But I wanted to segue over a little bit and talk about some of the things that are happening in America now. I know that you wrote a piece on basically the kind of the rise of the Civil War, the fact that some people are starting to think about this. There were some surveys, some polls, etc., where actually 31%, I don't know how many actually were polled. That's always an interesting thing to look up, but that they were kind of... been thinking about this. The dialectic, if you will, have definitely ramped up in America, the different wings, the left wing versus the right wing. There are actions that are being taken by the liberal world order, if you will, the establishment, which of course is driving both Trump supporters and conservatives and people on the right and nationalists into a very, well, I'd say desperate situation. And into this, Kevin, we can actually tie this issue of censorship, of everything that's been happening with YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, all these new news verification systems that they're incorporating, all these blocks and stuff like that. They're effectively using the technology that has been liberating to people who have a dissenting view against those people that have that dissenting view. And there were a couple of good articles out of Natural News talking about this too, about big tech, Silicon Valley, about how they basically are seeking at this point to kill free speech. They're going after, obviously, InfoWars has been targeted. They are in these lawsuits all the time, but it extends into other groups as well, which includes, as I mentioned in the beginning, Red Ice and people like, Faith Goldie and Millennial Matt, that was just most recently shut down from PayPal. And so I wanted to get your take on that, Kevin, in terms of where you think this is going and if you think that this censorship that they're involved in, at some point, it's going to start really hurting individuals and really hurting people, their ability to take care of themselves, their families. And effectively, they're also at that point creating individuals that are, well, effectively have nothing left to lose, where they have been destroyed by something which is as given as being able to travel to on the roads or something like that, right? Well, where is this going, do you think?
Well, there's no question that people are getting more and more polarized politically in America. That chart that in my article, you could see the increasing divergence of Republicans and Democrats. And it's really being pulled by the left. We talk about how good the internet is for us. I mean, without the internet, who identify with the alt-right or similar points of view. We think about, the internet has been our savior, really, because we have, websites like my websites, your Red Ice operation. And without the internet, where would we be? Before the internet, you really had a few networks run by wealthy people, mainly Jewish. But now they can see that this is leading to a terrible thing, because you've got people like us on the internet. You got to try to shut them down.
Why is that, Kevin? Why is that? I mean, because we're insignificant.
Our ideas are right.
Yeah, of course.
We're dangerous to the status quo.
That's
we really
right.
Are. Yep. We have a very well thought out position, and we are pointing at real dangers down the line for white people that our interests are not being met by the current regime. And the other thing that's happened online, I think, is that you know, you can see it on the picture that's on the screen now. You can see that divergence. And what's happening is that the Democrats are going left. And I think that may be partly because of social media as well, because they get on these things. And, you know, there's always the case in social media that it's the most extreme wins, you might say. They are the most, if you're going to be a virtue signaler, which most of these people are, they just love to show how nice they are, how good and all that, and how evil all Republicans, and especially Donald Trump, are. Well, you know, if you're always doing that, you've got to keep moving to the left to keep up, you know, and you've got to keep virtue signaling, and again, more and more extreme points of view seem to be acceptable. I think the Democratic Party is moving themselves outside the political mainstream on a lot of these points of view, like abolish ICE, for example. It's ridiculous to abolish ICE. And it's not a majority view by any means in America. The polls are way against it. But you got prominent politicians now saying that. And it's become a mantra on the left. So what's going to happen? I mean, I think that the Democrats, to the extent that, you know, I think Democrats have a real good chance, you know, to win in, say, in 2020, especially if they, you know, what they're doing to Trump and everything. But, you know, if they pick someone, now you got this Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, exactly. She won in the New York district there against, of course, and she ran, Kevin, on like, don't vote for the other guy because he's a white guy, you know, that kind of attitude, right?
And you know, you got Kristen Gillibrand from New York, the senator, abolish ICE.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren, abolish ICE. These are prominent Democrats. Yeah. People have talked about Elizabeth Warren as a presidential candidate. Well, you could. I wish she would be. Yeah, you know, because talking like that is not going to sell. It's just not going to sell to the most Americans.
Which shows the polarization, right? And to a certain extent, sorry to interrupt, Kevin, but the, you know, to combat Trump, right? Because they see. I mean, he's kind of, you know, he's very sensible, to be honest, despite what the left thinks of him. But I think that they feel that they have to kind of ramp up their, if they feel that he's gone, he's a white, I mean, this is the dialogue you hear in the media. He's a white nationalist. He supports like neo-Nazis and racists and open, you know, whatever the hell word they want to use to describe people who don't want to be demographically replaced and see problem with immigration. But anyway, So they, I think that the only thing that they feel and see is, well, then we have to shift and even move more towards the left. And historically, Kevin, this is what we've seen in countries like Germany, like in Russia, and these there were catastrophic civil wars and internal strifes and mass murders of countless of millions of people that came from an outcome of this. Is that where America is heading with the civil war kind of focus that you were talking about in the article?
We can't talk to each other anymore. I mean, really, you take a Democrat now, someone, you know, I look at people's Twitter feeds and they're on the left, liberal people. You can't talk with them anymore. And, you know, it's like they're just completely, they are sure that anybody who's not just a Trump supporter, but anybody who is a Republican even, is an absolute racist, misogynist, hater. And they hate, and they're fearful of change, and they have psychiatric issues, and it's like an amazing thing. There's not like you can try to talk to them, give them some data. They think you're evil. It's not a matter of data. It's a matter of you're a bad person, and I'm not. You know,
and we know, Kevin, that they feel good. They literally get a high, like the same thing that you do from cocaine by attacking you and charging you and blaming you. And I mean, they're high on this stuff, you know?
Honestly, there was an article in Quillette the other day, I guess, by some guy who was a reformed liberal. He said something that his manager didn't approve of about sex differences or something. And boy, he was just put out. But he talked about how when he used to tweet about, you know, calling someone a racist or something like that, he'd get this dopamine hit, you know. It's like really great feeling. There you go.
There it is. Yep.
Great. Yeah, I mean, That's the answer.
It's true. It's true, though. And it's dangerous because people are making decisions solely on emotions and what they feel.
And
frankly, if these people really cared about families, as has come out with all this, with children in cages, complete just psychotic overreaction to what's been happening at the border under Democrats and every president since the beginning of America, basically, which to like, we need to figure out who these people are. And if they enter in illegally with their children, they are going to separate them to figure out what the hell is going on. You know, it's just how else are you going to deal with it? But anyway, that whole thing, right? If they truly cared about children and stuff like that, they wouldn't go after people and their livelihoods and fire them from their jobs and fire them from, you know, oust them from these platforms because they're hurting people's ability to take care of their own families and their own children. It's all just for show, Kevin. It's just lies.
It's all just for show. You know, you go on these liberal things. I saw one the other day, some liberal guy. He says, you know, with Kavanaugh being nominated for Supreme Court, you know, what people are looking at his law degree and Yale and all that, and as if that's important. What's really important is his values. I mean, that's the only thing. They want people who are good, empathic people, because that's all that matters now, is your moral signaling. And it doesn't... And that's the way they see these Supreme Court decisions. It's a matter of outcome. It's not a matter of law. When they look at Roe v. Wade, classic abortion thing, they see it as, well, it was the right outcome. It doesn't matter how they got there. It's the right outcome. Those people's hearts were in the right place. And that's the way it is now. People on the left only want to talk about values. And so you can't argue with them. What are you going to say? I think that you know, the rule of law is better than you know, people just going with their heartstrings all the time. My God, if you can't run a society.
That's a Disney world view of the world, right? It's not the real world there. I mean, if you just abolish borders and stuff, I mean, there's going to be hundreds of millions of people probably flooding into America just because they want to have a better shot. They want to have a better life. So they give up on their own country. They flood into America. And with that, you would get terrorists. You get people who hate America. You would literally put these children, which they claim that they're so much for, in direct danger by terrorism, by attacks, by all kinds of things, right? So
you'd have massive poverty. You'd have huge increases in welfare use.
Yeah.
You'd have a huge underclass of people who can't deal with the school system. I mean, everything.
The depravity that would come from that.
They're suffering. They're poor over there, so let them come here.
I know. And they think so short term. It's just like literally like 5 minutes to please their own emotions without thinking of the long. What are the effects of this really going to be? And that's why it's like they don't live in reality. They live in this constructed box of some fantasy world that's like foofy. And they think it's going to come some utopia out of this. It's going to be
utopia.
Mass chaos.
That's the word I'm gonna use.
Yeah.
Exactly. Utopian, a utopian thinking, where you imagine an ideal world that conforms to your moral sentiments, and somehow that world is just going to, well, we saw what happened with the Soviet Union, you know, this utopian world that was dreamed of by these socialists and really had huge power among American intellectuals for 50 years after the revolution, after tens of millions of people were murdered. You know, we see what happens when they do these things. They turn into nightmares.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's a big tendency among white people to be attracted to this utopian, moralistic community. I mean, I wrote a paper on 19th century American intellectuals, the same thing, where they envisioned these ideal societies. They actually would create these societies, like Brook Farm, you know, it's a community, utopian community. You bring in, you have certain rules, and we're going to set up this utopia. Well, it folded in like several years from bankruptcy. But, you know, these are the people that led the anti-slavery movement. They were going to, you know, cure the world. 700,000 people died. Oh, it's just endless these people have this ingrained tendency to see the world that way. I don't think other people are quite like that. I think this is something that is a problem with white people more than other people. Mm. When we see these utopian schemes and we want to do the right thing and they're all bathed in this moral rhetoric, you know, we want to be nice people.
And we're taking advantage of course, during that process. Yeah,
absolutely. Every time that someone mentions some restriction on immigration or refugees or deporting illegals. We have all these sob stories in the media.
Yeah.
I used to read the LA Times all the time in Southern California. Every time it would happen, and they would see some sob story of one person who is inconvenienced, or, you know, because they, well, if they were deported, X would, Y would happen, or something like that. They're just pulling at your heartstrings. And they're not, you know, nobody's thinking of what is going to happen to the society, to your interests.
And to our children. That's the other thing too, Kevin, that again, we're back to the children issue. Like what,
exactly.
At some point you do have to make a decision. It is our own kids or it's other people's kids. And frankly, they already came from a country. We don't have another country to go to. There's nowhere we can flee. They can still go back to their country. And I'm not against helping these people in their own countries. And it's already massive amounts of aid that exist. And it's like we're doing everything that we can. We're literally depleting ourselves, some countries. Sweden is like that. I mentioned many times, hundreds of millions to Africa, like a continent of a billion people is being helped by a nation of 8 million people. You know, and we're sending them hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's still not enough. It's still not what happens. They have to flee to our countries because there's nothing left. I mean, those things could be argued, and why is that, and how do we fix that, and all that kind of stuff. But primarily, we can help them in their own countries and begin there, because otherwise, the future for our children is going to be as tragic and as devastating as the countries that these people flee from. And is that worth it? No, of course not.
No, of course not. They have to control their fertility, first and foremost. I mean, I know these liberals, and, you know, they're incredibly liberal, okay? And they got a couple kids. Well, now the kid is about to enter kindergarten. And by God, she was assigned to almost, you know, predominantly black school. Oh, they're horrified at that. You know, they would be horrified if it was a predominantly Latino school. But it doesn't change their attitudes. They still have this idea that, I don't know how they think about it. Well, maybe the teachers are racist in the black school, and that's the problem there. I don't know what their theory is, but they just don't get it. It's always seen as a moral issue involving white perfidy, racism, evil of some kind. And even when they know damn well they don't want their children in those schools, and they still keep advocating more immigration of people like that.
Yeah.
It's just nuts.
That's right. It's absolutely crazy. Now, there are other stories, of course, like this one here, where also this open discrimination is beginning. So we have, you know, deplatforming, we have shadow banning, we have algorithm running against it. I think in the past it came out stories that conservative groups were being targeted specifically by the IRS. Now there's people who are like throwing people out of bars. There are brands that are denying selling their products to Trump supporters. There are even people who are denying selling their house to if they find out that they're, you know, a Trump supporter. It's like, where does this end, and where can either Trump directly or just something else give, where there is some kind of protection for this kind of open discrimination that we're seeing? Because, Kevin, we're not talking about a small, you know, extreme demographic group. We're talking about the majority of the American people still that got Trump elected, right? I mean, there's the discussion whether it was like, you know, the electoral vote and all that. Was it really a number per number, you know, win or whatever? But regardless, he was elected through the process that America has. And there was many illegal votes that was exposed too, by the way, on the Democratic side. You know, illegals, there were people who were already dead that were voting and stuff like that. So there's all kind of stuff that they've been flubbing with the numbers. But regardless, it's almost half of the American population that selected Trump as their president. And they are the ones being discriminated against. So it's not like a small little fringe group. And so there has to be some kind of protection eventually for these people. And I think the more of these cases that we're getting with, you know, people being kicked off of platforms, demonetization or gateways shutting them down, I think I hope and I plead also with people out there that at some point we have to start putting pressure, both on the current sitting, you know, establishment or the current rulership, Trump even, so that he becomes aware of what it is that's actually happening, because it's his supporters that are being targeted for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. You had that article on Civil War II that I did. And part of that was the idea, part of polarization that we see now is trying to shame anybody supporting Trump, you know, in public places. I mean, this is a whole new level we've never seen before. where Kirstjen Nielsen goes out to a restaurant and is harassed. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is harassed.
The Red Hen incident.
Jared Kushner, as much as I dislike the guy, he has to go at night to a gym because he doesn't want to go there during the day anymore because he'd be seen and people will harass him.
Yep.
McConnell's been harassed. I think Breitbart had it in like 300 incidents of violence or threatened violence against Trump people. It's just spinning out of control. And that's what I'm saying. We are headed. And yeah, that guy.
Yep, remember that.
Throwing the drink, taking the hat. I mean, that's an amazing thing. We haven't really seen that before. So we see this polarization. Where does this end? My point in the Civil War is, though, if we're going to have one, we should have it ASAP because we are still, powerful in this country, and we have the guns, basically. So, we can assert ourselves. And in some ways, I'm hoping it gets more and more polarized. Polarization is the only thing that can really bring us the victory because if we, what's the worst thing in the world? Jeb Bush becomes president and we sort of sleepwalk through another 4 years while admitting millions of immigrants and extending the whole thing.
Cortez or Ocasio's get in, exactly. Right? And then what are you going to have on your hands, America? I mean, it's like, they're so infantile. Seriously, they think that, socialism, first of all, is kind of as implemented in like the Nordic countries, for example, was for a time an operational model because you had a small and a homogenous population. It saw itself as a kind of a family. And I'm not against that. I mean, I grew up in that. I've seen that in front of my eyes being destroyed during my lifetime. But it was also standing on the backbone of a previous era of a very strong, industrious period where you have more of a free market, right? And we moved into actually national socialism. It was a nationalistic kind of socialism for a while in Sweden. And then as nationalism became unpopular, shall we say, after the Second World War, they started removing that bit. And then that of course, led to the ultimate destruction of the country by admitting everyone and trying to help everyone and this very anti-Swedish kind of sentiment. But for Cortes to think that a country of 350 million people from all kinds of walks of life are going to rally around each other and help each other out and have a functioning welfare system under democratic socialism is deluding herself. It's never going to work,
It's never going to work. And what we're importing is more and more social division, and frankly, more and more anti-white hatred. We see that every day if you follow social media, but you're also seeing it in mainstream media, Huffington Post, Salon. Somebody posted a tweet and it's got like 12 different Salon headlines, which are just clearly anti-white. You'd never see that against any other group. So we're seeing this more and more. And I think a lot of white people are waking up. It's gratifying that immigration is now the number one issue for most voters, especially Republicans. They see that as the most important thing. But even then, it's not enough. I mean, a majority of Republicans, it's only 20% think that's the number one issue, but the rest are all fragmented. But immigration is the number one issue. And I think that's one of the things that Trump has done. I mean, we all critical of Trump in various ways. But he has brought immigration to the fore more than any other president. That's the thing about Jeb Bush. If he'd been president or Hillary Clinton, immigration would go on autopilot for the next four years.
Absolutely. It would probably be worse. It would deepen and worsen with the pressure from his Mexican wife.
You wouldn't hear about it in the media.
Yeah.
Because, all the changes would be in the direction of the left where they get more people, et cetera.
Yeah.
And the New York Times isn't going to emphasize that. They're going to thought, now because of this change in the law, we're going to move up the end of white majority by 3 years or something. They would just ignore it. It was an autopilot for years. And I think that one of the big things that Trump has done is to bring that out.
Absolutely. Let's reflect on that a little bit while we'll play some of these clips. Recently, during the NATO summit, he brought attention to it later, of course, with Theresa May. Just check out these clips, guys.
I mean, I think they like me a lot in the UK. I think they agree with me on immigration. I'm very strong on immigration. I made a point today. I said, you've got to stop. You're ruining you're going to have a lot of problems. You see what's going on throughout the world with immigration. I probably at least partially won an election because of immigration. If you look at Italy, Giuseppe, who I got to know quite well over the last month and a half, he won his election because of strong immigration policies on Italy. I think that a lot of the people in the UK, I think that's why Brexit happened. But I will say that immigration is a very important thing. And I told them today the EU, the European Union, better be very careful because immigration is taking over Europe, and they better be very, very careful. And I said that loud and clear.
See, that's super important. Here's another one from Theresa May. Check this out, or during the press conference.
Prime Minister, I wonder whether you agree with the President of the United States that immigration has damaged the cultural fabric of Europe. And President, perhaps you could elaborate on that remark. What do you mean by that?
I think it's been very bad for Europe. I think Europe is a place I know very well, and I think that what has happened is very tough. It's a very tough situation. I mean, you see the same terror attacks that I do. We see them a lot. I just think it's changing the culture. I think it's a very negative thing for Europe. I think it's very negative. Very much hurt Germany. I think it's very much hurt other parts of Europe. And I know it's politically not necessarily correct to say that, but I'll say it, and I'll say it loud. And I think they better watch themselves because you are changing culture. You are changing a lot of things. You're changing security. Look at what's happening. I mean, you take a look. Look at what's happening to different countries that never had difficulty, never had problems. It's a very sad situation. It's very unfortunate. But I do not think it's good for Europe, and I don't think it's good for our country.
Yeah, see, I mean, he's bringing attention to this, Kevin. No, I mean, what other world leader would talk like this? And it's a salvation. We need this at this time. And okay, granted,
maybe Orban.
Yeah, well, there are some. Obviously, I see he mentioned Matteo Salvini. There's others, of course. He mentioned Orban. There's a few of them. They're starting to do that right now, and that's thank God for that. But at the same time, I know that the immigration crisis have kind of, it was ramping up as Trump was getting ready to do his campaign and stuff like that. So, everything was kind of, like a perfect storm, if you will, around that time. But again, I don't think anyone else would have talked about it in this way. And effectively telling Europe, like, you're destroying your culture, you better watch your back. It's so wonderful to hear a guy on this level address these issues,
So wonderful. That's kind of rhetoric is what attracted us on the alt-right, I think, to him during the campaign. He was saying things like this. He would say things like, Europe's not Europe anymore. You go to Paris, it's not Paris anymore. That's been going on for a long time. And that's the thing that sort of pricked up my ears and really got me enthusiastic about Trump's candidacy. And again, win, lose, or draw, I mean, he has brought this issue up like nobody else has. And I think he's having an effect on European politics. He shows, he's talking like that. Well, that sort of disinhibits voters. They might have been inhibited before. Oh, I don't want to be a racist. Well, you got Trump saying that. It's more respectable.
And it's not that this is out of bounds or like, thank you that he's addressing. It's like any rational person who's living in the real world and seeing this needs to be talking about these issues, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a utter denial of what has happened. I think, when he brought in Sweden, he mentioned that it was a big story, not only, of course, in Sweden, but even around the world that some were like, what is he talking about? While others was like, finally, someone is actually talking about what's happening. And this helps to tarnish the image internationally. And Sweden has always been very concerned with these issues of like, how do other people see us, right? This is a deep concern for looking good in the eyes of others, right? And so that's super beneficial, and it helps us to realize that we're on the wrong track. And as the image begins to change abroad in other countries, it's becoming easier for Swedish people and others in other European nations as well to begin to change their political mindset and their framework and say, something is wrong here. It doesn't work anymore. And we have him to thank for that,
Well, I would like to reiterate your point there about Sweden. It's a very conformist culture, more so than probably any other culture I know of. And so when you have the dominance of the left, when the media narrative, the school system, they're all pushing this pro-immigration thing, it's so hard to get out of that. But I think Trump is helping by bringing those things up, saying, hey, it's not so great. We're really changing culture. And what Trump is saying is very profound. I mean, you can't just change culture willy-nilly without, you know, dramatic effects and a lot of unforeseen consequences.
It's an experiment. It's an open-air laboratory where they have no idea what the outcome is going to be.
We're going to do this multicultural experiment. No one's ever done it before.
No.
But, hey, it's going to work out just fine. They just know it is. And if you disagree, well, we're going to shun you. We're going to get you fired from your job. We're going to make you lose your family and your friends. Oh, and then we'll feel better about ourselves. But, you know, it's absolutely insane what's going on.
Yep, absolutely. We're losing our culture. We're losing our countries. We're slowly being replaced in our own countries. And we're not supposed to notice those things because those are not, it's not nice behavior to talk about those things. And it's like how far they have pushed the cultural and the narrative and the framework, how people see the world, where they're more afraid of being, you know, socially ousted than actually taking the consequences. Yeah. Because ultimately it is a choice. It's like, are we going to ensure the continuation of the security of the future of our children, or are we just going to leave this to a whim and just see, let's just see what happens. Obviously we know this is going to turn bad. Already what's happened is making it bad. We can see that the trends are only going to continue. So, you know, we know what the outcome is and we know that we are connecting these dots. We're seeing where this is leading. We're actively engaging in the real world and the real issues that are happening. But as more of us are addressing them, they are panicking. They're utterly terrified for the reach and for the discourse that we managed to push, that they're now they're going after us, trying to shut us out from the platforms. They're shutting us down from financially being able to continue, you know, making sure that we can live and have a roof over our heads. You know, this is war. I mean, it is war. It's a different way of it, but it's a war already, Kevin.
It's a war already, and I think you're right about people with children seem to be more concerned about the future. I read things to that effect, and. Yeah, you and I have children. We're worried about the future. But I would be worried anyway, frankly. You know, we have ethnic interests that go beyond our own family. If I had no kids at all, I would still want to see the future of my people
absolutely. You know,
succeed.
Yep.
They are doing what they can now to turn us off. And I worry that they, you know, Google, you see all the, you know, the censorship forces are there. Facebook, Twitter, they have a lot of power. And, you know, you gotta hope that Jared Taylor's lawsuit against Twitter can work because, you know, if we start getting banned completely from social media, it's going to be a problem. And then you can imagine, you know, there's a lot of pressure on internet service providers for websites. And being able to take credit cards, being kicking off PayPal. We got kicked off PayPal. And a drastic effect on subscription stocks so quarterly because people don't automatically renew. Same with PayPal. We got knocked off of PayPal. Actual quarter got knocked off. Actual Observer got knocked off. Donations are way down. They have power. And there's no question about it.
They're using it, Kevin, and there's no doubt that, of course, this has major damage. I mean, again, you guys and Ameren were some of the early ones targeted. There's many others too. But as they expand their net, I guess, their web, their reach, as they're going, they won't settle. This is my point. They won't settle for, you know, organizations on this level. They're going to continue and they're going to breach out. They're going to do the next one. I think the next phase, what is that going to be? I think it's probably going to be InfoWars, Stefan Molyneux, Rubin Report, you know, these kind of little bit more mainline conservative, but still kind of on the fringes a little bit because they dare to address some of these a little bit more extreme, you know, issues, if you will. They're not extreme, but, you know, in the eyes of these leftists, they are, of course. So, and so I think, Kevin, that the more they do this, they are effectively not only killing their own platforms, but they're making sure that there's going to be a massive wave of resistance against them. And I hope that there's going to be other platforms that are going to run them over eventually because they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. But they're doing a lot of damage in the process, obviously.
I sure hope so. I that's what I'd like to see. We see what's already happening in Europe. They don't have a First Amendment. But the problem is so much of the our access to publicity is owned by big corporations who are on the left entirely. So But yeah, this is encouraging that the judge allows Jared Taylor's lawsuit to go forward. That would be nice, but it's based on a California law. It's not really a First Amendment issue. And so we can't depend. Well, they could change the law in California once they realize that it's, you know,
it's benefiting the wrong people, right? The law.
It's benefiting the wrong people. They'll change it in a heartbeat. Yeah. I mean, California is completely left. I mean, they got at least 3/4 of the state legislature is Democrat now. And a huge number of Latinos in there. Oh, it's
a mess. Yeah, it is a mess. One quick note on this there, of course, the double standard, but I was just in checking, you know, the corporate governance of PayPal as we were shut down by them. And of course, we urge everyone out there listening and watching this, like, put pressure on these people, for Christ's sake. I mean, write to them, tweet at them, write at their support, write at any way that you can, complain, tell them you'll cancel your PayPal account. I mean, we can't just roll over and lay down, and I'm never asking that. But at the same time, I don't want to do business with them. But it's the principle that we have to fight back. But anyway, I was clicking in on their Code of Business Conduct and Ethics, right? They have this little nice PDF here that's, you know, explains what their Code of Business Conduct and Ethics really is. And if you scroll down a little bit, of course, not only talk about inclusion, well, what does that mean? They actually directly address under respect and value uniqueness. They say, actively listen and seek diversity of thought. It's like such hypocrites and idiots. It's unbelievable. You know, it's like it's such lies again. It's just, I don't know if this is private individuals making these decisions or if there's other organizations that are threatening PayPal, if you will, with, I don't know, lawsuits or something like that. Who knows, right? It might even be Visa and MasterCard for all we know, putting pressure on PayPal. And then it's a hot potato. They don't handle it or whatever, but it's all pretend. That's what's so annoying here, that they're talking about inclusion. They talk about diversity of thought. They talk about this issue of allowing it for everyone and not discriminating and stuff. And like you're just like those who are, you think are the bad people. They're no better, you know, no better.
I can't help noticing that. Balance action with empathy. Once again, we see, you know, that is the standard that everything is going to be decided by. Interests be damned, you know, and real world, you know, psychology, what people are like, all that, throw that out. Empathy is the only criterion of any action these days.
Yeah, definitely. Well, obviously, that's also why it's so important that people out there support the work of Kevin MacDonald, the Occidental Quarterly, the Occidental Observer. Absolutely. Yeah, all of us. And it's up to everyone out there to step up to the plate and help us. And obviously, that's what they've done already, right? And I made this point in the video that I made that, you know, we've always been dependent on people out there, you know, subscribing and supporting us and donating and all this kind of stuff. And nothing has really changed there in that capacity. We've been able to grow as much as we have with the aid and the help of the people out there that have supported us. It's just that the ability to basically reach these people or having an interface between them and us financially, that's what's been severed. And so obviously we can try different methods and paths, and we will do that, and we're going to do that, and I think we're going to be successful, but it might be a period where this hurts us very badly financially, and so in the meantime we have to have individuals step up to the plate and help you guys, and you know, Kevin, tell us just about that, obviously how people can sign up to the Occidental Quarterly, how can they donate, how do they support you guys?
Well, I edit Occidental Observer and Occidental Quarterly. Now, if you go to Occidental Observer website, a recent blog has subscription information, or else go to www.toqonline, you can subscribe. And they have a way of, I believe, of processing credit card payments now. You can also send checks to like Occidental Observer and Occidental Quarterly. We have an address on our donate button. And that certainly helps a lot. We have been hurt by this. I mean, PayPal was so easy for so many people to do this, and they have accounts and everything, and it's a regular thing for them. Now, when you don't have that, then they got to write out a check, or they got to do a lot more stuff. Anyway, it's just harder.
People out there have to. I mean, and I get that. I get the convenience, and of course, that's what we all want. But people out there have to, like, come on, man. Come on, guys. You know, you got to break out of that and actually help people and step up to the plate and do two extra steps. That's basically what it is, instead of just, you know, one click or whatever. Show some energy, show some dedication, show some interest in people who are out there like us, like Kevin, like us, We're out there with our faces, our real names. We're fighting this fight. We're involved. We're trying to awaken more people, get more people involved so we can actually change things politically. If we can't change things politically, we want to change things culturally. And I think we can change it politically from there, et cetera. We're engaging in people out there. And we're just there, you know, commenting on the news, on the reality of the day, what's happening, what's going on. We're showing why this is bad. We're giving our input, our opinion. We're not hateful. We're not, we don't, you know, hate anybody. We're not violent. There's nothing like that. And we're just trying to highlight that what this leading to, where we are going right now within society is going to lead to complete chaos and disintegration of the social fabric of our countries. And I don't think anyone wants that. Maybe some of these chaotic, you know, leftists want this or something like that. They just want to see destruction. They don't care about their utopia at the end of it. They just want to have bloodshed and murder and chaos or something. I don't know what they want, but there is that small little fringe faction. But most people, Kevin, who have children and families and who just care, and they're kind of nice people. And I understand that they want to help people, and they're indoctrinated that this is the moral thing to do and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, people, they don't want that. They don't want what is coming. And it would be such a shame for us to basically just realize this when it's at our doorstep and then effectively it being too late to do something about the problem. So it's better to act now and do something now as a pushback and engage politically, become aware, help Kevin out, you know, get a subscription, donate to them, donate to us, you know, continue the of allowing us to be out there to perform this fight, you know?
It's so important. I mean, in the case of Occidental Observer, we have in Occidental Quarterly, we have these writers, young guys. They really appreciate the stipend that we give them for their articles. It's an important part of their financial life. You compare that, it's relatively small compared to what some say these neoconservative think tanks are giving to people. That's the big success of these Jewish movements really have been that they're well funded in the end. If you're a neoconservative and you start saying the right things, you hate Russia and you love Israel and all that, you know, you can get a great job writing op-eds, doing research. I mean, all kinds of jobs in Washington, D.C. for people like that. And then when the right administration gets in, you get a government job. When a new administration gets in, then you have to leave the government, but you get a nice job in a think tank. You make 200, who knows how much money you make. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. We aren't even close to that. But it's important that we have an economic niche where people can make a living doing what we're doing, that they don't feel that they're going to lose their life by getting involved with this stuff. And you got a family, that's really important to think about. You got a child now, right? It's really a serious, serious issue. You're out there. You don't have a safety net. You don't have workman's comp or something. I mean, you don't have any way of getting on in the world except this is it, you know? And so that's the kind of thing that we have to make possible among our side.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. And I mentioned this in a tweet. I said, while Red Eyes TV is targeted financially, shut down by gateways and payment processors. And again, there's many others struggling with this right now. And so I know it's not only us, and you guys out there should help everyone who have these issues really step up to the plate here. But, we struggle to handle relatively low monthly expenses compared to many other media outlets. But these are the sums that bankers who are obviously controlling the financial system are willing and dealing with. Lloyd Blankfein, is going to be getting an $85 million payout when he leaves Goldman Sachs, right? I mean, it's like unbelievable amounts of money that's out there by this corrupt system and by these bankers and stuff. And they're literally denying people to put food on their table and having a roof over their head. I mean, it's like something's got to give about this. I mean, this is, if there's any kind of let them eat cake scenario repeating itself, it would be this kind of stuff, Kevin.
Yeah, the financial rewards for Goldman Sachs or any of these big corporations are just mind-boggling. And that's part of what's happened is that you've had this 1% or 0.1% just getting further and further away from the rest of it. And we see that, you know, that is most extreme in these liberal strongholds, California and New York. You know, that's where you see the biggest gap between the rich and the poor is in those liberal-dominated societies. And I really believe that what one of the big things that we don't talk about much in the last 50 years is that we have changed the class structure of this country completely, where there's far more egalitarian. The CEOs certainly made more money in those days. They didn't make that much more money. And so you're getting more and more of a situation where it's a very small, tiny group at the top have billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And then you have everybody else. And I think that's what they're aiming for, really. They want a situation where you have elite control, where a few people with an awful lot of money can pull the strings. That's what happened in Russia. We were talking about it before. You know, when communism ended and the whole economy ended up with six Jews and one Russian, I think. And you know, Putin comes in and he sees this happening, that their whole political life is now between a few people with billions of dollars and millions, tens of millions of Russians with virtually nothing. Well, that's what's going to happen in the long run in the United States. I mean, that we're headed towards that kind of extreme gaps in wealth.
Yeah, exactly. That, and that's, of course, the depravity of that and this elite class, the champagne socialists that are pushing this issue too of equality and equal things. And as you say, it just keeps drifting apart even further. And you know, that establishment is seeking to do that. They want complete subjugation of a low class. It's a kind of a slave that they just can push around, some kind of mongrelized low IQ individual, which the elite thinks that they can just like operate like some little pet or something like that, you know?
Yes, this is what's happening in California. They have the highest rate of poverty in the country, the whole country. But they also have huge numbers of billionaires. You got, you got Silicon Valley, people like Jeff Bezos. And he's got, I don't know, over $100 billion, I think, now, because Amazon stock has gone through the roof. So he's just like wealthier than any human has ever been in history. He's in California. Well, he's based all over. But anyway, the point is, Silicon Valley, just billions and billions of dollars. You go to San Francisco, try to get a hotel room for less than $300 a night, or try to rent an apartment for less than, you know, $5,000 a month. You get a little hovel somewhere. The property values, everything's gone sky high. At the same time, homelessness has increased huge, $150 billion. My God.
And that's amazing. That's extraordinary. That's unreal. You know, it's unreal.
As Bill Gates, for God's sake.
Oh, he beat him. He beat him now. That's what I saw. He was like completely outdoing him at this point. I don't know why the stocks have been driven up or whatever, but it's also this interesting thing that in the world of, what's the word? I guess diversity we could use. Diversity of platforms that's available, diversity of merchants to being out on online and stuff like that, it still kind of always just coalesces into this one monopoly giant that ends up dominating everything. And this is true for the financial sector too, right? They suck up everyone. And although that there are some kind of antitrust laws, it doesn't seem to operate that very well. It's just these mega companies that are morally and ethically driven by the left-wing mentality, a cultural Marxist, and these like progressive ideas. And that's how we're ended up in this shit situation, Kevin, you know?
Jeff Bezos is amazing. Unfortunately, he's on the left. You know, he owns the Washington Post, which I get their emails every day. It's just like a compendium of Trump hate. It's amazing. They routinely editorialize throughout the newspaper.
Washington Compost. Yeah, it's a piece of trash.
It is.
Yeah, I've never read it. I've never read anything so, I don't know, I've said this for months and months, over a year now since Trump has been in. It's just the most ludicrous garbage I've seen. But, you know, again, they're losing. You know, mainstream media is losing. CNN is dropping. All these mainstream, because they're liars and they make stuff up and they don't tell the truth. And so we are here ready to, you know, take on that role of actually telling people what really is going on in the world. And that's why they want to shut us down, Kevin. But we should end on that note. We've kept you for way too long. So thank you so much, Kevin, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, enjoy it. We'll do it again soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. But everyone out there, support Kevin. Go to the Occidental Quarterly. We'll have the website linked up, of course. Get it. Get a subscription to the Quarterly magazine. It's well put together. It's beautifully printed. There's a lot of good articles in there. So definitely support Kevin. Thank you so much again for coming on, my friend.
Thanks,
we'll talk to you later. All right.
Be good.
Thanks. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there we have it. Thank you so much for watching or for listening today. We really appreciate it. We're going to be back with much more from now on. We have the new studio set up, as I said in the beginning of the show, and we are just getting started. A new phase for Red Ice is beginning. We're going to do much more live shows. We're going to do eventually a news broadcast, probably live. We're still working out that. We'll continue, of course, with Weekend Warrior, as usual, our main kind of flagship show at redicemembers.com, where we analyze the news, watch kind of the progression of the culture war. Definitely tune into that if you're new to that show. A lot of fun material that we cover that too, and positive news too, for that matter. So we're going to be back. We're going to continue. We're going to hit back harder than ever. We are currently, as I said in the opening of this interview and that we talked with Kevin about, we are currently being hit very hard by the payment processors. PayPal has shut us down. Our ability to, of course, continue to fund the operation is currently dead in the water. We've gotten help from a lot of you out there already. I want to especially thank you guys for everything that you've done for us. Thank you. You've ensured that we can continue and proceed with the project, continue with Red Ice as a media platform, and then we'll go from there. We'll see what happens. We're going to incorporate, of course, new payment processors. We're going to continue, of course, to accept subscriptions. We're not there yet, but we'll keep you guys informed and let you know how things go. So anyway, we're moving forward. Lots of good stuff coming up. We're excited about this. We have new people that we're going to bring on board eventually, to new contributors and things like that. We're just churning out some of the details of how to expand and how to grow in face of this opposition and this pushback, because our side is only winning. The winds of change is not moving in the favor of our opposers, our opposition. It's actually moving for the advantage of people like us, because we dare to speak about the reality, and these people know that, and that's why they're trying to shut us down. So again, thank you to everyone out there for donating. If you want to help us out, make sure that Red Ice can continue. Please check the description for information about how you can donate to Red Ice and to us as well, and making sure that we can continue. So thank you guys again for watching and for listening. We'll be back with much more. Until then, take care and stay safe out there, everybody. We'll see you later.